All right. Good morning, folks. This is Commissioner Brian Kalk. We're meeting in the 12th Florida Capitol today. It's Tuesday. Wait a minute now. It's Wednesday, January 23rd. Am I correct in that, my colleagues? 2013. And what we're doing today is we're having a our consumer affairs advocate Scott Sheldon is going to update us on some things that he found stemming from some customer concerns he received. The particular case number that we'll reference later on is from PU06-42, basically the Keystone Pipeline that went through the eastern part of North Dakota. The construction started in, I believe, 2007-2008 timeframe. Product finally went into production in 2008, early 2009. The point today of the discussion is Mr. Sheldon's going to be updating the commission on what he found. And then the way I see this playing out is my colleagues and I will talk through this, and we'll determine a path forward. If we need more information, if we need the company to come back in, if we want individual citizens to come back in. But really, later on in the work session, we'll probably go through the parts of the order that talk about sound and noise. So with that, that's kind of my setup. I'd open it up to my colleagues if they had any comments or directions. Commissioner Fedorchuk, this is probably your portfolio. So I would open it up to you if you have any comments. And just the green lights for my colleagues, make sure we're picking ourselves on the record and broadcasting.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do not have any comments this morning.
Okay, thank you, Julie. Randy? I just leave mine on all the time.
Nor do I, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate that a trip was made down there, and so we get the information and can get a look at it and instead of just hearing about it. So looking forward to the whole presentation.
Okay.
I didn't know any of this was needed, so I wasn't prepared ahead of time.
We're being joined by Alana Jeffcoat-Sacco, our general counsel at this time.
I have printed the last supplemental order, and Shelley is printing the 42-page original order, because I'm not sure which one we have to look at.
What I'm thinking about is reviewing the part of that talks about noise standards.
And I think that's in the original. She's now producing that. Okay, I printed this supplemental so we could read down what each one did so we can remind ourselves that the other supplementals didn't change the noise standards. So I have four of those. She's getting the 42-page original.
All right, thank you, Alana. Okay, with that, Scott, I will turn it over to you. Just in the background, too, the way this laid out is, like I said, Scott got the phone calls as our consumer affairs. He went out and did the initial research. Public Utilities has had some input in this, but quite honestly, we've not involved Public Utilities until we get direction from the commission, because what we decide today will probably set the course for what we do here or don't do in the next period of time. So, Scott, I'd be happy to turn it over to you and tell us what you found, or give me a bit more background if I didn't hit it.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Commissioner. I did start receiving some calls about the Fort Ransom pump station approximately in the middle of December. After visiting with Patrick Fawn and Mark Grumman, it was determined that a visit to that pump station would be appropriate. Working with TransCanada and Mr. Pansky, I worked out a date that would work out for myself and have the ability to have somebody at the pump station to maybe show me around a little bit. Mr. Pansky was not able to make it during the day, but I was able to get to the Fort Ransom pump station on the 27th of December. What I'm going to do now is just take you through kind of like a PowerPoint with pictures that go through what I experienced that day. I do have some recordings to hopefully give you a little bit of, to see exactly what I saw and heard that day at the pump station.
Excuse me, Scott.
Yeah, go ahead, Julie.
Is Mr. Pansky the complainant?
Correct. He is the one that I have spoken to probably three times now about this issue. I will show you during the presentation exactly where he lives compared to the pump station and what I found on his property.
Okay.
Scott, if I could, too, with Alana in the room now, just to make sure I'm clear and my colleagues with Alana, our legal, our general counsel, what we have now, the way I see it, is an individual that has concerns that Scott is trying to work through. The commission's getting an update. But if an individual chose to file a complaint, they could do that at any time, correct?
An individual can file an informal or formal complaint at any time. I guess I'd consider this informal.
What trips what trips that from what we would call an informal complaint, which I agree, I see this as to what would be a formal complaint where we would handle it, let's say, a different way.
Well, an informal complaint is coming in writing or over the phone, and it's providing information, and staff takes all of those, whatever topic, and looks into it further to figure out if it can be resolved or not. Staff could file, if staff's investigation of an informal complaint leads it to believe that there's a reason to file a formal complaint, staff can file a formal complaint if it goes that way. But in addition, if staff thinks that the matter is resolved or thinks that there's nothing we can do, that individual still has the right to file a formal document, a pleading, like you would in court, with allegations and a prayer for relief. That is a formal complaint. Think of the one that's been filed against, you know, the one on the manufactured housing. That's an example of a formal complaint. And there's formal steps then the commission would take. Staff could do that also. If staff was prepared to, thought there was a harm that needed to be addressed and was prepared to meet the burden of proof, because the person filing the formal complaint has the burden of proof. We do have a couple brochures on that. Scott, I don't know if you've already handed those out to this person, but we can provide those You Should Know brochures or the link on the difference between formal and informal and the procedure.
Okay.
Okay. And I do have the orders now. Does anyone know which finding of fact we're looking for here? Quickly?
I don't believe so yet, Alana. Okay. Unless some. The one of the things that I think really makes this one particularly challenging is that the standard for noise, there's no, like if you have a standard for mercury or sulfur, there's a hard number that you can scientifically lay out there. For the noise standard, there's a EPA guideline, and there's really no state standard for noise. So we have a guideline that has been used over decades, but I think that's going to further, just as a setup, there's no number here that the feds say or the states say that is required to be met. Okay, thank you, Lana. Scott, go ahead and keep rolling. And if anybody has any questions as Scott goes through, it's best to probably answer them as he's going through it. Thank you, Lana.
I think the first thing I should go through is explain to you how I came up with my decibel readings. And I'm going to tell you that I stopped by the Bismarck police station to pick up a decibel reader. I tested it as I was at the station. Two hours and so later when I arrived at Fort Ransom, I realized that the batteries lasted approximately 5 minutes. Before I went down there, I did download an application on my iPhone called Noise Sniffer. Which I thought at the time, I'm just going to try this and see how it worked. When I got back to my home, I did test the actual decibel reader next to the iPhone application to see how accurate it was. And I do have copies of that just to show you. This is just to hopefully give us, to let you know that what I did, I believe, was fairly accurate. So This is two different readings, basically setting them on my kitchen counter. And so you can clearly see that very close. So I believe the readings I received were accurate as decibel reader.
So that's the noise decibels in your house.
Correct.
Well, maybe for the tape, Scott, if you could just go through the two readings. Sure. And just give the numbers for the record.
Sure. I have two photos of the decibel reader plus the application used. One of them shows, the decibel reader shows 49.6, where the application shows 49.02. Another one shows the decibel reader at 41.9 and the application at 41.96.
So in one case, the application is less than the reader. In their case, it's more than the
right
reader.
But I don't believe at any point it was a point. I mean, it wasn't more than a point off.
Okay, thank you, Scott.
As I was traveling to Fort Ransom, like I said, you basically turn and go south right before Valley City. You know, not far from Fort Ransom State Park, where this pump station is. I also wanted to document as far as the temperature, humidity, dew point. I think the one thing on here that's important to look at is the wind and the direction the wind's coming from. I believe that has a lot to do with the readings. So on that day, like I said, you can clearly see it was coming out of the east-southeast at approximately 11 miles per hour. The first place I stopped was the actual pump station itself. This is standing right in front of the pump station. There are the pumps right there. There's actually one more pump, so there's actually four pumps on the location. Standing in front of the pumps.
Scott, do you have a better definition for the pump this than just the location? I mean, is there a number on this, that this is pump station number 6 or 16? Or I know we have Todd's in the audience. If there's a better way to define which station we're actually talking about, would be helpful. So if we're hearing from the site at Fort Ransom, that's enough detail, perhaps? Okay. So we'll call this the site at Fort Ransom.
Fort Ransom Pump Station.
Oh, okay. Thank you. And then Alana just talked to me about, just to set the reference here, too, on part section 110 of the order that was passed by the previous commission. And I will say that because the three of us were not here at that time. Talks about noise. And there will be five pump stations in North Dakota approximately 40 to 50 miles apart in relative rural locations. So the description we just used, I think, is fine. Let's see here. Keystone provided late file exhibits, which included maps depicting pump station locations and showing that based on estimated noise projections, no residents or business will experience a sound pressure level greater than 55 decibels, dBA, the residents closest to the pump, that is pump station 19 at milepost 217.7 in Sargent County, is not occupied. It's a little more definition. A sound pressure level of 55 dBA is approximately equivalent to noise from a car that is approximately 100 yards away, traveling at 40 miles per hour. Keystone will manage the sound levels of the five pump stations in North Dakota to 55 dBA at the nearest noise-sensitive area. So that's what was in our order, if you will, of 55 dBA. And for me personally, Keystone will manage the sound levels of the five pump stations in North Dakota to 55 dBA to the nearest noise-sensitive area. And turning over to my legal counsel, I think that's a pretty vague term, isn't it? The term being the nearest noise-sensitive area.
Yes, it is. We don't know if that means occupied residence or what it means.
It doesn't say an hour. Like sometimes for Shadow Flicker, we'll say can exceed this amount no less than this many hours.
Right.
This appears to be all the time.
The next finding, which is the two in that section, there's only two in that section, finding 110 and finding 111, just says that what you just said up above leads you to conclude that there's no significant impact relative to noise at the pump stations. And the significant impact would be something you would have to manage differently. So that's the commission's previous statement on noise.
Okay. Thank you, Lon. I think it's just a good setup as we go through this discussion. Thank you, Scott. Oh, go ahead.
This was at the time of approval, which was 2008.
Yes.
February 21st, 2008. Okay.
So this is in front of the pumps at the Fort Ransom pump station. You can see that it's loud there. There are four pumps. Actually, when I was there at the time, three of the four pumps were running. This is not a variable pump station, so when these pumps are on, they are on full blast. They do not throttle them at any point. So these are three pumps going at capacity.
And what's the level that you're reading there, Scott?
75.82.
Thank you.
And can you, that noise reference, tell me about that, please.
That's part of the application that came on there. It just discussed for each sound that you get, it gives kind of a reference of how loud that is. So in this case, it says this is average road traffic at 25 miles per hour from busy primary distributor road. Also could be related to a vacuum cleaner noise. So that was, like I said, I basically got out of my vehicle. I met with a gentleman, Wayne Barrett. was my contact with TransCanada, who was in charge of giving me a tour of the pump station along with the surrounding area. So as we were at the pump station, we kind of went through, and you can see the loops, the 1, 2, 3, 4 loops, 5 loops there. So I kind of went into the pump station. So now I'm in this section right here. You can see, you know, the sound does not change much, still, you know, significant volume.
Make sure you give those numbers as you do.
So now this section was 71.22 decibels. And then this, I think, is very important.
It's actually louder outside than in the middle of the pumps?
Well, this is basically standing right in front of it. So I'm basically catching all the noise from it.
Okay.
This other picture, I'm actually kind of in it. So the sound, I believe, is kind of going
outside
of me.
All right.
This picture I find very interesting, and Wayne made a point to point this out to me. You see this wrap around the piping there? That's insulation. And that apparently has many different layers of insulation to muffle the sound. And I don't know exactly when that was placed on there, but early on it was at a significant cost to TransCanada.
Did they say, Scott, it looks like in your photo that part of it is insulated and part isn't?
Right. What happens is there's a valve that controls the flow through the pipes, and when that valve is either when that valve is completely open, the sound is at its least. But when they have to slow it down for some reason, for downstream or whatever it would be, it's that valve that actually causes the friction that causes more noise. So what they did is they put the insulation around the pipes that were around the valve, which is right here, which the valve has even more protection over it.
And you don't know when those were added?
I actually don't. I've had no when the insulation was added.
But these are things, Commissioner Fedorchak, that at the end of this, I would envision there may be a list of questions that we present to the company. I mean, that's one way we could go with some of these questions, and so that's a great one to keep track of.
Now, this last one here, and I'm going to click on this. This is actually a video. This is from the closest road to the pump station. So I am basically in front of the pump station to the north of it. And I'll let you listen to it.
How many feet?
Feet I was from the pump station? I would say 50 yards.
And refresh me, the wind was from the
southeast.
Southeast, so you were kind of downwind.
Correct.
Directly, but pretty close. Okay.
Correct. So you can kind of sense that it's, like I said, I refer to it kind of as a screechy vacuum, or I know a lot of people refer to it as like a grain dryer noise. Right. We'll listen to it one more time, I think.
With the levels 48, 1, 2, 3, right.
Also in there, if you notice some of the structures.
Randy, do you have a question?
Yeah, Scott, yeah. Before you go on, I don't know how the volume is set on here. Is that about how loud you would say it seemed to you standing there listening?
It did. Okay. I mean, it like I said, it was a constant noise just like that. So, like I said, I was actually in the vehicle, opened the window up, turned off the vehicle, and basically just sat and listened, and I actually kind of just waited for a consistent wind or a consistent, so I could kind of get something. But I kind of recorded for, I thought, a distance or a length that would give you an adequate of how it sounded. And like I said, at that point, I also checked the decibel reader to see, and it was at 48.23.
Quite honestly, there's no way to distinguish between the noise of the wind and the noise of the pump station on any type of reading device.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. But that level was lower than what the company agreed to manage.
Right, what we put in our order as a provision.
Approved.
Absolutely.
Correct.
As far as the wind goes, do you really hear wind at 11 miles an hour? Did you do a reading out somewhere where there was nothing?
Well, there's some other spots that I checked where I actually stood with my back to the wind, so the wind wouldn't affect my reader, and it read actually fairly close to the same. So I think just because we hear the wind noise as it goes across, I don't believe it's picking up that as wind noise.
But even if there was no wind, the noise would be less than that. What I'm saying is the wind would not add to, I mean, if there was no wind, the noise would be less than what it is now.
Correct.
Is the thing to point out.
I believe so. So that's the pump station. The next place I went after the pump station was to Bruce Pansky's location. And you can see there is the pump station. I went, you know, as the crow flies to his driveway, which is where this mailbox is, 0.95 miles, and I took a reading there.
Do that again now, Scott. Walk me through again. With the northern part of this photo is what again?
This is the pump station right here.
Okay.
This is to the north up here.
All right.
This is the route to Bruce Pansky's driveway.
And did Mr. Pansky, to your knowledge, live there when, like, the hearing would have been held down there for him to come say his piece? I mean, was he someone involved in this process, do you know, as a sighting, or is he someone that moved into the area?
I do not believe he was aware of the pump station during his time. From as much as Bruce has informed me, he does not have a home on this location as of right now.
So it would not be an occupied residence?
Correct.
Okay.
I believe there are plans to do building in this area. And like I said, this is where the mailbox is right here. I believe this driveway leads to an area over here where he plans on constructing a home.
Scott, do you know how long he has owned this area?
I do not.
So whether he had it in 2008 or he just acquired it, we don't know that.
Right.
Well, and the Julie's questions are right on target, but what we're trying to establish, I think, is just, I mean, if he was here, he didn't say his piece during it, that's a big thing. But if an individual moves into an area, we've talked about this before with power line sightings, that you make sure everybody's all far away back from power lines, and somebody moves in right under the power line, it's kind of like they knew it was there. But in this case, I mean, that's the same thing kind of apply, or that the standard is still 55, right?
Well, the standard that you wrote in here is 55. I think in a very generic sense, I'm going to say this. If there's always a potential for something to develop afterward that makes you think, oh, I didn't realize it was going to be that loud. I didn't realize that was the wrong standard. I mean, even if he lived there in 08, maybe he signed an easement that agreed to this, but may not live there, but own the property. But maybe he's realizing afterwards, this is louder than I thought it was going to be, and it's too loud. This is just hypothetical, but...
Just like we do for wind turbines, landowners will sign waivers to things as the company goes through it.
That's true, but I also think that the commission can look at whatever evidence develops later and determine if anything should change one way or the other. There's a process for doing that. It includes notice to the company, but... It's not impossible just because the thing was done 5 years ago. You can look at it again. You can look at anything again if you follow the steps that are proper.
Okay. Well, and it's of interest to me if something has changed. I mean, if he's had this for 4 years and 5 years, and it's just now complaining about it, you know, did he just realize he just now could, or is it gotten worse, or, you know, what's changed to precipitate this, or maybe he just got it and...
As the discussion has gone on here, I thought I understood Scott one way at the beginning, and now I'm confused. So, the triangle that's indicated at the bottom of the yellow line,
right here,
is where his home is now.
That's his mailbox. He does not have a home here. This is an entry road to his property, which had a sign that said "Do Not Trespassing." So I didn't feel comfortable driving along this road.
There's no home. He doesn't live anywhere there.
Correct. There are outlying buildings, which I could see from the road, but as far as a residence, I do not believe. I do know that he's commented before about hunting in this area and hearing the pump station. He also has talked to me about fishing, which I believe if I would have moved over, the Cheyenne River goes right over to the side of his property, which he also claimed to have heard this noise.
And maybe Todd can answer this, but when was this completed? It probably wasn't completed in 2008. So
the project?
Yeah, this pump station, when would it have been?
It was part of the original plan leading it, so it would be the 2008 construction, 2009 operations.
Okay.
He said 2008 construction, 2009 operations.
Off the top of my head, that's what I recall.
Okay. All right, thank you.
But at this point, by this mailbox where I'm standing right here, the reading I showed was 37.11. It references it to a quiet library or a country park.
Less than what you found in your kitchen.
Less than what I found in my kitchen.
I mean, just as a reference.
As a reference, yeah. And I can tell you that I stood for approximately 5 minutes, and I tried to see if I could hear something. And I from this location, I couldn't. And just to show you, if I can zoom in here, you can see the pump station right there. Just to give you a reference of what 0.94 miles is from his mailbox to that location.
And the wind, you were still downwind?
The wind was coming from my back and from my side. So I was, as I'm holding the reader, I was kind of shielding it from the wind because the wind was coming from my back blowing. So it was coming from the opposite direction of where I'm at.
The wind was going from you toward the pump station.
Yeah, the wind was coming from back here this way.
So do we know anything, or do you have anything coming up that indicates how much difference that makes? If the wind would have been blowing from the pump station toward you, do we think that would have made a significant difference?
I did stop at one other spot that kind of was, I believe, in the direction the wind was more directly going towards, and so I'll take a look at that in a second.
Well, wind probably doesn't carry noise. In fact, if the wind is blowing towards you, it might muffle the noise. I don't know. I'm not a wind expert.
Right. Yeah.
But I want to go back to something Alana said, that as well, I'm thinking through this myself, that it's up to the individual to prove their case. Not up to us to prove or disprove. We go upon the preponderance of the facts, right? So what we're talking, I think, is all good discussion. I can see a setup here of if someone, well, I can just see where I think I'm going on this. All right.
Okay. So that was Bruce Pansky's area. The next one I'm going to go to, his name is Myron Hammer.
Now, how did you find these other people to pick their spots? Did you just draw a little circle around the pump station, or?
Bruce actually gave me a list of names of neighbors.
Of course, okay.
That also he believed are affected by this pump station noise. And so I had a general list, and so I kind of wanted to do as good as a radius around the pump station as I could, incorporating some of the people that he had stated also had issues. So, pump station. This road down around into a little bit of a valley here. This is Myron Hammer's mailbox. From his mailbox, standing out in front of his house, I showed 33.50. And this is more of a general observation, but gorgeous area. Cheyenne River is going right behind his house over here. He's down in a valley. Like I said, I believe that's the quietest decibel reading I got all day.
Scott, have you shared this information back with I just forgot his name.
Bruce.
Mr. Pansky. Bruce Pansky.
I have not. My plan was to bring this to the commissioners first to see what our next step would be. This just shows Myron's house. He did speak to me about hearing the noise in his bathroom. I didn't feel comfortable going in his bathroom to do that, but I did do a test right outside of his front door. a little bit more toward the, and that could be house noise, why the difference is, because this, of course, was closer to the pump station. This was farther away, but like I said, closer to the home. He did have quite a bit of family there eating, and so I think there was a little bit of noise from that. But
did we, I mean, I'm just thinking out loud here, but we listened to a tape where it was in the 40 range, which is below the 55 of the order, but you could clearly hear the pump station in the background. So I think it may be reasonable that at 39 they still can distinguish the pump station sound from their house, but it appears to be below the level of 55. I mean, that's a thing that could be taking place.
Right. I can tell you that at no point in this area did I hear the pump station.
When you were there?
When I was there.
Okay.
And again, like I said, the wind is coming from the south and in the east, so it's not blowing towards me. But like I said, I did not hear it. And again, I stood by this mailbox for at least 3 minutes, and I heard more nature than anything. This was the one that was a little bit out of the ordinary, but I thought, you know what, it's a location not far away from the pump station, 0.87 miles. There's a cemetery, which I know nobody lives at, but just to get a little different reading. And so there's the pump station.
Would that be an occupied residence?
Might be.
We have some high noise standards.
Right.
Be offending the dead.
Checking the cemeteries out. But like I said, you can see the pump station right there. There's the cemetery, and I mainly did this because I knew my next stop after this was going to be right here. And so I thought, as a reference point, I'll stop by the cemetery just to see. 47.34. Again, I really couldn't hear it. Now, it shows that it was louder, and maybe that's the low frequency of it. I maybe wasn't picking up with my ear. But like I said, that's what it did show. Again, not far off of my kitchen. This picture, I want to zoom in a little bit again just to show you. You can see the pump station's equipment right there, just to give you a little bit of visual distance from where I was at. So next we'll go to, and this is rental property owned by Meyer and Hammer. And this is the closest location I tested at 0.54 miles. There's the pump station. That is where I'm standing right here.
When you say rental property, like cash rent farming or?
Rental as in, I believe, just the...
It doesn't matter, I don't think. But
just the residence.
Okay. So he's the owner, but someone else may be living there.
Correct. Okay. And I did knock on the door to introduce myself, let them know what I was there to do. The daughter was home, so I informed her what I was doing, gave her my business card, let her know if she had any questions that she was calling me. I hadn't received any information from them. But again, here's the property. I mean, this one you can, of course, clearly see pump station equipment from their property. I mean, there's basically a field in between.
Did she talk about hearing it?
I asked, and she said no. And I'm guessing inside of the home, you probably couldn't. And I could hear it while I was standing here, but yet when I recorded it, I really couldn't. And I'll let you listen to this. It's not as long as a clip, but... And I think if you listen really close, you hear a really light, that buzzy kind of noise still. And so I believe that's what it's picking up, but... You can kind of hear it more at the end. Maybe it's more of a constant. Like I said, it doesn't go up or down. It's just a constant noise. But again, that's the closest property I was to it. I tested from this location. It came to be 43.73, which is actually lower than the cemetery. But like I said, at the cemetery, of course, it's a little bit farther away, but I really couldn't hear anything at the cemetery, even with the louder decibel reading. Here, like I said, this is the location where... just as a bystander, I could hear it. I mean, there is no question that I could hear that noise from this location. And to me, this sounded like somebody vacuuming off in the distance. Mm-hmm. But I could hear it.
The noise is not intermittent at all, correct? It's constant, same?
Correct.
24/7.
24/7.
Isn't that a point of controversy, though? The Mr. Panzer says that, in his opinion, he does not believe that. His complaint alleged a ramping up and down of noise. But what Scott found, I think, is different, though, right?
Right. What I looked into and what Bruce had brought up numerous times is that they're running four pumps. And that's why it gets louder. With more pumps, it gets louder. I had Robert Latimer with TransCanada do some checking for me as far as how many times or for what length of time have they ran all four pumps. And he sent me a sheet that showed it. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. There were 8 times during 2012 that all four pumps ran. They range in hours from 5.7 hours. One was 15 hours. That was the longest. And then the rest were 3.4, 3.5, 3.2, 1.8, 2. And so for a total of 34.6 hours, did all four pumps run continuously?
Scott, I have a question. That's okay. Since it's the valve opening and closing that needs that insulation, do we know, is that maybe what the gentleman is saying, you know, the insulation isn't working as well as it should, so he's hearing that change, like valve is closed or whichever is the softer, and then when it opens, it gets louder, yeah, maybe not as loud as it would without insulation.
Right.
Is that the difference?
Well, first, just to clarify, when it's open, it's quieter.
Okay. Well,
it's the closing that causes the friction that makes the more noise. They would like to, of course, run it open, but because
right.
of how it has to flow, they do have to close it at some time. But Bruce really hasn't mentioned much about the valve itself. He mentions more about he believes they're running four pumps. That's what's causing most of the noise.
Right, but he's not going to know.
Right.
We need to ask the company, I think, for the couple of those readings to see
right.
what the difference is there.
I do have to tell you, too, that while I was there with Wayne, after we had gone through, we came back to the pump station, and he just got a call from TransCanada in, I believe it's Alberta, Canada, saying that we're going to be switching, the flow is going to be different, we're going to be switching to two pumps. Get ready. And so we actually stood right by this area when the pumps changed to 3 to 2, I couldn't really tell the difference. And maybe I was just used to it. I did readings. I didn't keep them down because they were very similar. So in my mind, the amount of pumps didn't amplify the sound because I think they're all at the same sound level, if that makes sense.
So your intensity increases, but the level doesn't, if that makes sense.
Correct. I believe that.
Like two motors, they can't pull anymore, but they can pull. Yeah.
But
no more speed, but more power.
If he's just confusing the amount of pumps running with the amount that the valves are closed, that would be a reasonable
mm-hmm.
confusion on his part, and we should probably get some information about that.
Yeah, what's going through my mind here is, I mean, it's useful, but we don't know if we're doing any of this statistically correctly, you know, and all the different variations and the different times of day and stuff, and, you know, I don't know how to accomplish that, but...
Well, Scott did a great setup of what we asked him to do.
Yes, he did a great one.
Because we asked him to go out and just see if there's something here to look with, and I think for me personally, it's... This is an opportunity to walk this concern through, but a larger opportunity of how the commission deals with noise in the future, because some of the background discussion I've had with PHMSA is that the federal pipeline folks, they don't even acknowledge noise at all, because it's not a hard standard. It's something that no matter what you do, there's someone upset about it, and so they don't take noise as a consideration in any of what they do at the PHMSA level. And so...
But they're concerned with safety.
Absolutely.
Correct?
So they'll have
so
a concern.
It's not a safety issue. It's a quality of life.
Absolutely. And that's where the state of North Dakota and this commission previous and us too, I mean, me for sure, I voted on things putting in noise guidelines. Mm-hmm. And so as we go forward, maybe we can learn something in this case that says the guideline we have is too stringent. Maybe it's not stringent enough, because really that's one thing that I've always struggled with is why 55? Why not 50? Why not 60? And there are some levels that are OSHA for what you have to do at higher levels. I don't know exactly what those are, but like at certain levels you have to wear hearing protection. And did you have to put wearing hearing protection to go inside there? Were you supposed to? Do you know of?
I did not.
But I wonder if like 70 decibels seems to me somewhere that hearing protection is required somewhere in that area by workforce safety and OSHA and those things.
I believe there was a sign inside of the station house that stated that if you're to be outside for this amount of time, hearing protection is required. And it did state on some of the equipment, especially when you got real close to the pumps, you know, what decibel the pump has. I was going to mention just quickly that this company, ATCO Noise Management, did tests on this for us or for the company.
For the application?
For the application.
Oh,
so, I mean, they did do quite a few tests from different properties. And it was interesting because reviewing my information with theirs, their daytime, nighttime decibel receptors in different locations showed readings of 41, 42, and 35. Which, like I said, I think if you look, I mean, it's not that terrible far off.
Right.
I received some in the 30s, a couple in the 40s. Like I said, a couple in the higher 40s, the 47 at the cemetery. But I mean, I read through their information that they did, and I mean, this is a professional company that puts calibrated equipment out for extended periods of time and shows exactly, you know, how things went. So,
well, but and I can't speak for Mr. Pansky, but I mean, I go deer hunting in the fall, like everybody else half of North Dakota does. And you'll be sitting out at night at 5 o'clock at night, and it'll be quiet as ever, and you can hear a car door slam from 4 miles away. I mean, there's no question about it. So if the individual's concern is he's hearing the pump stations when he's out doing his hunting, fishing, I have no doubt that he hears them. Mm-hmm. I think it's all about trying to find what that standard is and making sure we're – I mean, that's I think for us – there's a process we go through, but at the end of the day, it might come down to he'll have to make a decision what he chooses to do to challenge a standard or not.
Yeah, Scott, does Mr. Pansky complain that sometimes it's louder than others, or is it just constantly bothersome?
He complains that it's sometimes louder than others, and that's where he will bring up the all four pumps running suggestion.
And that's what bothers him. It's not that it exists ever. It's that sometimes it's intolerable. Or
correct.
He wants it gone.
Well, and the times that he talks about hearing it the most, it seems like when he's trying to enjoy some recreation activities such as the hunting where he's in a stand. And I think your senses are at a heightened alert. And so he hears it. And maybe he hears just that low buzz, but in the silence of early morning, that maybe sounds like a freight train. Mm-hmm. When he's out fishing on the Cheyenne, that sound maybe interrupts the nature that's around him.
Well, I wonder if, I mean, I would not be opposed to getting some questions to give to the company. And then if Julie, if that's okay with you, that we would have them come back, either give it to us in a presentation format or if they want to give it to us in writing. I mean, I don't.
No.
I think that's a reasonable. That's probably where Alana was going to, I think.
Well, kind of to what Alana was saying earlier, it comes down to, you know, we set the standard. They set the standard in 2008 at 55 decibels, and the company's meeting that. So it's up to us to say that's not acceptable. We think it should be opened up and lowered. Or, you know, if we don't go that route, then it's what can the company do to help address this? And are they willing to do some additional, take some additional
measures? But do you think that let me rephrase that. I don't think what Scott's presented us has been able to make a conclusion that they're not ever spiking above 55. Because of the order states all the time.
Yeah.
So I think it's a first step that there was nothing that jumped out at us here, but there we don't know, I don't think, unless we'd
right.
see some type of a back to my scientist days, you 24-hour period for a two-day period at certain receptor points, and then you come back and you just look at the data, and then it...
That data from the company have that?
It does.
But they didn't test at the site.
Well, that was at application time, right?
This was correct.
Yeah.
This was December 9th, 2011.
Okay.
And see, that's one of the things that...
It wasn't on this after constructed, post-construction, in operation.
Might have been right testing. After construction. I mean, like, first construction. I don't know. Go ahead.
I want to turn your mic on, Todd.
This was done as a result of the noise concern by Mr. Pansky, and we have been working with him, and so we... Oh. Commissioned that independent study to determine the levels, and we have taken several corrective actions, I think, Mr. Sheldon.
Well, I think I don't want to get this because the point of this is our discussion, but you're helping us out as we steer through it. I think maybe that could be part of the presentation they give us, is to walk us through their version of the study and what they're doing, and then from there we would make a recommendation. And whatever we decide, Mr. Panzer, we could Scott. I would be fine with Scott giving him back what he found and letting him know what we're doing. And if he has additional information that he would like to submit, if he submitted a sampling that, like you just did, that showed something, that would be helpful.
Mm-hmm. Before I forget, I was going to mention this, and there's a reason I took a picture of this, is Mr. Pansky has spoken to Rob Latimer with TransCanada, and they have current plans as soon as the ground thaws that Mr. Pansky has offered some of his trees from his tree farm on his property to put around the pump station. Mm-hmm. So that has already been in discussion beforehand. That's an option that they're both looking into. Rob was very honest with me and said the company that did the research on the sound did not know how much that would really benefit. But I know, speaking to Rob, and sometimes I think that this pump station out in the middle of nowhere with nothing around it, maybe if you put trees around it, maybe the less you see of it, the less you'll hear of it. But I do know that I also mentioned to Rob, and this I don't know if it will help that terrible much either, but as you go around this, that's not a good picture, as you look around the station, maybe this will, there's a fence, chain link fence going all the way around it. Of course, with barbed wire around the top. They make privacy slats that you can put in between the fence that goes through. Even something like that, if that helps at all, that's a low-cost idea to go along with the tree planting.
Well, but there's also, though, that there's a standard. If the company's meeting the standard, they're meeting the standard. I mean, you're talking above and beyond, which is good stewards, and it's all good. I mean, this is a very broad discussion about a lot of things going forward. But what you're saying, I think, is ideas that could be offered by the company to, because I think that's what I'd like to do. Next, get the company back here and let us know what they're doing. Get the information to Mr. Pansky, and then it's kind of see how it all plays out. I sense we're kind of playing mediator here a little bit, but we're also learning along the way. Because there's something that the company happened that caused them to wrap that. So there's something that caused that.
Correct.
So they're obviously, in their mind, there was some things that exceeded or whatever.
I should mention, too, that in my discussions with Mr. Pansky, he has offered and somewhat requested to, at some point, present his feelings on this to the commission.
Okay.
I am pleased to know that the company and Mr. Pansky are working together already, because obviously that's probably the most constructive.
Okay, so what particular questions do we want... I mean, we can always come back to this, but just off the top to set some parameters. For the company to come back, Alana, what's the time frame that we would probably schedule this, probably have Scott talk to the company and get some dates? Would this require the 45-day notice? I don't think it would.
No,
it's just a matter
just
of
putting it on a meeting. I mean, just deciding on a meeting and inviting both sides.
All right, so Scott, can you talk with the company and see some dates that they can come back and give their pitch as to why? Well, as to what's going on with noise for this station. And then, Julie, you had a couple of questions that you wanted to maybe address?
Well, I would just be interested in knowing what they're doing to mediate, what they can do, what they are doing. And I'd also be interested in knowing from Mr. Pansky why the delay in the complaint. If it was, and maybe just got there, but it seems interesting that it's been, you know, 3 or 4 years since the pumping station has been operational, and now there's noise complaints. So if something has changed, or if you just newly acquired this spot and started recreating there.
Okay, Randy, do you have any questions that you want in particular to, and we can, of course, we'll have the, we'll call this an informal?
I think so, yes.
I think so.
Should be.
So we can, well, the way the informal process works is that it's more formal than we're doing now, but it's not a hearing. So I'll open up the informal, we'll go around, we'll take appearances from everybody there. What the company offers, will actually, they'll offer is into the record. So at that point, they'll take that document that Scott's probably got in their copy, they'll offer it in, we'll accept it, and that'll become part of the official record for the case. And so it'll be a little bit more structured. We won't be swearing anybody in. There won't be an ALJ there or anything. And then depending what happens, then it could go to a formal concern. But that'd be the next step. For Mr. Pansky, I guess based on what the company has, we may ask him to come in. Will he come in the informal too?
He should definitely be invited.
Yeah, I think
because
that's...
you shouldn't, we, you know, even now, I don't know if he was notified about this so he could listen in. So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
We told him that's what I wanted to make Adam ensure we sept a copy of this and we were broadcasting.
Right.
I don't know if he's out there or not, but right. He can
so
sure
So he would be
to
invited,
it.
And if he has other material that he wants to submit,
okay.
And then you can ask some of these questions directly to him mm-hmm. if you don't find out ahead of time.
And that's in the chance where anything that he has that he wants to submit to Scott ahead of time, I think that'd be fine to look at, but that's where he would bring his information in as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, Scott, if you could talk to Mr. Pansky as well mm-hmm. and see what sometimes would work with him.
I think the one thing I have, and I don't know how we traditionally do this.
This is
but
new ground, actually, in some of this noise stuff.
Well, but I mean with complaints in general.
Okay.
Someone mentioned, you know, checking with the company and finding a date for a meeting. To me, it seems like, you know, the company probably has more than one person they could send or that sort of thing. But the landowner out there is probably a one-person show.
Right.
And so do we kind of work with them on finding if they want to come, a
yes,
date that works for them?
Yes, they have to schlep to Bismarck. And yes, they can appear by phone if they want to, but quite often
over the web.
Happier being.
Yeah, absolutely, Randy. So Randy's point, I think, is make it a priority to make sure that the concerned landowner can come here.
Yeah.
And I can't speak for the company, but I would, and the landowner, but I would think the sooner the better for all this. This is not something we want to schedule in May or June.
Now, we do normally reserve the afternoon of meeting days for informals.
Right.
So you don't have to think about scheduling it specifically. I don't know if the other commissioners know that, but...
see it on the calendar.
Yeah, and then it gets canceled. So we can do that, or we can schedule something specific after Scott has an opportunity to find out when people could come.
I see your point, Alana. Ask Mr. Pansky right up front if these dates work and
yeah.
Take that approach. Well, and quite honestly, the informal for January 30th, we've already got something booked into there. But the one in February 6th, well, that's NARUC, that's right, 13th. 13th, we've already got...
Well, Scott.
Well, see, that's the problem is that already gets out so long because we're already out. The 13th is already something booked. We're already out to the 27th, and I would prefer to have it in earlier February than later February.
Well, then we can schedule specifically, but Scott could get dates.
But I would think the afternoon would be better for all of us because the mornings are busy with testimony, and I could see this thing going on a few hours. Mm-hmm. I could see
He is out of Fargo.
Alana, does there have to be a standing? At this point, there's no standing that matters as far as this is not a – I shouldn't say it doesn't matter. The fact that he doesn't live there, it's different to me right up front. He doesn't live there. And so I'm wondering, that's a question I'll ask him when he gets here, but does that really change how we would approach this, the fact that he doesn't live in it, it's not an occupied residence?
I don't know that it changes the informal complaint. People have a concern, we try to address it.
Right.
Not necessarily change everything for that concern, but we try to figure out a resolution. If he were to file a formal complaint and the company were to say he doesn't have standing because he doesn't, you know, then that's where you get to those issues.
Okay.
The informal, I don't know, Scott, you handle these 1,000 times a day.
We never ask standing questions about
we don't
complaints. We just try to work through it.
The public jump through too high a bar.
But that's a question that could come up down the road.
It could come up, and you can certainly inquire of him. Well, you know, why do you care so much now, or what is it that's different from the hearing? till now that it bothers you, or all these questions that would go to whether you had met that bar or not?
No.
When did he first complain?
Well, obviously, I don't know for sure, but obviously the company was working with him from the building. I mean, they said they put something up, the insulation up for...
I think within the last year or so, it's kind of come to head that he was hoping to get more movement in his opinion. And
Head, but I think the company may have been working with him earlier than that yet.
Well, I was going to say, this sound test was done December of 11. So
he tried to get resolution with the company, probably didn't feel like he was getting enough and came here. He didn't start here.
Correct.
That's my understanding anyway. I don't know all the details.
Lana, can you give us, and I know I don't want to take too much longer because everybody's got busy schedules, but when the commission kind of settled in on the 55 decibels, was there much rationale as to why we did that? Because I was here when we had the arguments between the three of us about what's the appropriate setback, and I held strong at 1,400, and that ended up being where we're at. But there was no science involved in 1,400 feet. It's just we settled in on that.
I don't have any inside story on the 55 decibels. Pat might.
Okay.
Or Jerry, but
Would we want a staff memo prior to the informal on this? Like, I would think that
wouldn't hurt a basis for 55. It might have been. It's possible, and I don't know enough about it because Bill Binney.
It's an EPA guideline, I know. But I don't know that
it's been in their application, and we didn't find a reason to deviate. I don't know.
Okay. Because that's what I'm thinking for Julie and Randy going forward. I see this noise as being a really big issue in a lot of things that we do because it's really come up a lot in wind farms. Mm-hmm. As we get more pipelines and more populous areas, I just think that we'll go through the siting, and then we're going to have a lot of questions coming up as to some of the things that we picked as numbers, and so I don't think this is a one-time occurrence.
Good point. And it's an issue of the balance, you know, quality of life. Economic growth. I mean, that's the balance we have here, and it's not an easy one to get at. And everybody has different hearing, we can't hear, other people, it sounds like, you know, somebody hammering on a lead pipe. So
I don't know if you wanted to, if this should be after adjournment or something with generalized question, but 1,400 feet is what we require them to be away from occupied residences. Is that what I'm understanding?
For wind turbines, wind towers, we've kind of settled in on a standard of 1,400 feet. Some counties have ramped it up to 1,700 feet. So what the commission does in those cases, if a county has a standard on something, we've never overruled the county. We've gone with their standard because usually their standard is more restrictive. If a county had a standard less restrictive than ours, we held ours. So I don't know, in this case, if a county passed an ordinance that set a sound standard, we've never dealt with that before. But that's kind of where you work with what the federal guidelines, something that might be in law, county guidelines, safety standards to kind of develop what we do with our siting criteria.
I see on this map that the pump station is on the same section of land as his location down there by his mailbox. Was the right-of-way acquired from him? Or maybe it's the next section over to the east and west, but the same section south, was that? Did any of this go over his property or as far as getting rights-of-way?
I don't believe so. Like I said, there's a road that goes down here, and then he is off to the east.
But the pipeline, I'm assuming, travels north and south. So it probably runs straight down just west of his place.
He might or might not be in the corridor, which we were just talking about this morning.
Absolutely. But those are questions for the companies listening in. There's something that's a question that they could certainly include in what they're going to present to us. Okay, so let's see here. Double-check notes here. Now, that's where, back to the question on staff, is that I think we're kind of past the point where we're going to look for staff to make a determination on whether this is a formal complaint or not. That's where I think we've got to get Pat involved.
Yes. And I don't know if staff has asked itself or if any commissioners have asked staff, okay, knowing everything you know now, would you take this any further on your own or not? Do you think there's anything, I can say right here, I don't think there's enough that I've seen that they're violating any order, but would you take it further to maybe revise the order? And that's not a complaint. You don't do that by complaint, but you do that by a formal process. I don't know that staff has had that discussion with itself.
Okay. Typically, Julie, the portfolio holder, unless one of us really had a desire to get in the middle of that, would coordinate with the staff expert. So is that something that
Sure. You
could do? Because I would certainly like to hear what Pat's thoughts about all this are. Because I asked Pat if he was going to sit in today, and he was tied in with those interviews. Otherwise, Pat probably would have sat in with us today. Because he would have been, I guess, on probably advisory staff through this whole thing.
Yes.
So that's a question that makes you. Because he would have lived all this through, and he would have some really good technical background on it. Now, Alana brought up a point, too, that's interesting, is that, and this has never been exercised in my time here, but if the three of us decided today, you know what, we think 55 is too high or too low, we could notice a hearing and open it all back up again and change the standard.
Yes.
Potentially.
There's a state law that says the commission can revisit any order with notice to the company involved, and then, of course, anybody else who's interested. So in this citing case, it'd be public notice, too. I would never recommend against that. Again, sometimes staff might learn a bunch of stuff and come to you and say, we think we'd like you to do this. We know all this stuff, and we'd like you to open it up again. Or you might be learning it directly in a forum like this and tell staff, get the paperwork together. We want you to reopen this.
That's one of the key things. Even though a previous commission may have done something, it doesn't mean our hands are tied on it. I think it'll be an uphill battle, perhaps, because it opens up a lot of concerns, but it doesn't mean we couldn't look at something one way or the other. It could become less restrictive. Mm-hmm. And I'm just thinking out loud here again, too, but one of the things that struck me right away when I read this was that it said 55 decibels all the time. And to have anything all the time is pretty hard. And that's why in some of the other noise things we maybe let them exceed it in certain periods of time, hour a day or 2 hours a day when there's certain parameters. So maybe that's something we look forward to with. I mean, the Keystone Pipeline, the governor of Nebraska said it's okay. We might be citing the next Keystone through North Dakota.
Well, that would be a helpful technical explanation from the company. How does it work? Does the drives the sound up? How many times a day? That type of thing. Just an explanation of.
Okay.
What drives the sound and how often it changes and that sort of thing.
I see the company taking great notes.
And while he's taking notes, what does the company think the words nearest noise sensitive area mean?
Oh.
I have no idea.
I can ask Pat if there was any clarity in that in the citing process.
There might have been in the application too or
yeah.
In the hearing.
Okay. All right. Well, Julie, do you have anything else?
I do not.
Randy?
I do not.
Lana?
No.
Scott, anything else for the? So you're going to call him and let him know and all that stuff?
Correct.
Okay, well, unless there's anything else, we'll close the work session on case number PU06-42. Thank you all very much.